right, I'm going to hopefully give you an easy day, colleagues, because you have worked yourselves very hard. We are in the Senate General Education and General Government Committee. Welcome. Good morning. Please turn off all cell phones, PDAs, anything that makes noise, because I'll nail you. And you'll be writing a check to the Common School Fund. We're going to start out first with a public hearing on HCR 10.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, HCR 10 honors Robert Y. Thornton for his years of service, making him one of Oregon's most distinguished public servants of the 20th century. He passed away his 1910 to 2003.
Great. Representative Berger. Well, not great that he passed away, but...
If you're going to have a memorial, you got to do that, you know?
The requisite.
Yeah.
For the record, Vicki Berger, State Representative, District 20, Salem area. I will not take much of your time here. You have the resolution before you, and if you read through it, you're going to see a bio of things that kind of takes your breath away in terms of all the things that he did. Bob Thornton was, when I first got involved in local, you know, sort of government at the very lowest level, it was one of those names that people say, Bob Thornton, and you knew it was somebody really important. But it was more connected in my mind with his later work connecting Oregon with Japan. If you recall, there was a time when Japan was our most important trading partner, and he was one of our most important citizens at that time because he spoke Japanese and he understood the Japanese, and he had been very active in that. It wasn't until later I came into this building and my first legislative page came up to my office, and it was Bob Thornton's grandson, Tom Thornton's son. And Tom Thornton, I think you all should know, he's in the back of the room. He is now retired from the state police. He is Bob Thornton's only son, and I kind of got to know the family. And when this came forward that we had never honored Robert Thornton, I was just honestly embarrassed. This man has spent a lifetime in service to his country as an officer, as a he learned Japanese the hard way as an intelligence officer during the Second World War. He then was only briefly in the House of Representatives, then went on to be our Attorney General. He has spent an incredible lifetime of service to this state, and I think it's time we recognize it officially with this resolution. So I would recommend that you read through this, and if you don't agree with me that it's time, where have you guys been?
Well, he gave 93 years of his life to this country, and I was pleased to read about his service, and I noticed that he's one of two Oregonians to serve in three branches of government. I think the other one's still not dead yet. That would be our governor.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to give you guys a full speech on Robert Y. Thornton. I think it could be saved for the floor. But I think that just reading through this, you get a flavor of how important this man has been. And irony of ironies, when this was heard in the House Rules Committee, another thing that was on the agenda concerned another matter altogether, and we were quoting opinions that he wrote in the 60s and 70s in talking about this other bill. So, I mean, as Attorney General for 16 years, his influence is incredible on our system of laws and on our state as a whole. So,
well, I see here, colleagues on lines 16 and 17, he was hired and promoted an unprecedented number of women and minorities to serve on his staff when he was Attorney General. That deserves a lot of recognition because back then women were having a very hard time, and minorities, in moving around in government and being recognized that we were something more than just potted plants. So I appreciate that Mr. Thornton recognized that. Any other questions or comments before I put my foot in my mouth any more than I already have?
I've never thought of women as potted plants.
I would guess that any man who sits here today and is married would know that women are not potted plants.
Oh, that's a fact.
Uh-huh.
Well, thank you for your consideration of this. I think it's time, Madam Chair, that we honor this gentleman, and this is the way to do it, or one way to do it. And remember, When you read this bio, I mean, this is my third term, and I've worked pretty hard in three terms. Think of the lifetime of service that he's given. It's incredible.
It is, and thank you for bringing this to us. All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'll close the public hearing on HCR 10. Open a work session on HCR 10.
Madam Chair, I move HCR 10 to the Senate floor with the recommendation that it be adopted.
Senator Cruz moves HCR 10 to the floor of the Senate with a recommendation that it be adopted. Any discussion? Ms. Gravel, come on. Give us a roll call.
Scripps.
Aye.
Yeah,
because
you're
doing.
Aye.
Vice Chancellor?
Aye.
Chair Walker? Aye. HCR 10 is on its way to the floor. Who would like to carry
Madam Chair,
that?
I would suggest we have Senator Winters do it as she's chief sponsor.
Okay. Sounds great. She will do Mr. Thornton proud. Okay. We are moving right along. We'll open a public hearing, or we'll close the work session first on HCR 10. Open a public hearing on HB 2823. And who's here for that? Representative Clem. Well, unless you'd like to help fund education in Oregon, that would be fine. Good.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Brian Clem, State Representative for Central and East Salem, and I'm happy to come talk to you today about... So 2823. This is a bill that Representative Kotek ends up here this morning. You might hear her story about how it got started. But there was a student at Oregon State University who was working with the OSU student government to try and get a concept like this done just for Oregon State. And for whatever reason, it didn't take off with the student government. They were working on other projects. And one of his classmates happens to be a legislative aide here this session. And there was a day earlier this year when I spoke on the floor about the 65th anniversary of the executive order that ordered people of Japanese ancestry to go to the relocation centers and then onward to internment camps. And I mentioned that my father-in-law was interned. And he walked by my office a few weeks later and said, you know, there was this idea that we had. What would you think about it? And he talked to Representative Kotek as well. And so we sponsored the bill. And there's two things I want to mention specifically about the bill that as it moved through the House kind of came clear to me. There certainly was over... There she is. Hi. There have been efforts, mostly by the United States government, to address some of the injustices done to the internees. I actually brought the original letter that came to Carol's dad from the George Bush Sr., the White House, that was sent to him in 1988, and there was a reparation payment. What a lot of folks don't know is if the internee had already passed away, and many, many had, then your family or their family didn't get a letter or any kind of apology.
Gee, that wasn't very nice.
Well, it happens. So this is a bill that one particular feature of it would apply to family members or personal representatives of a deceased person. So that way children and or surviving spouses could also receive the honorary degree on the behalf of the family member. And the other thing is that this particular generation of individuals are now in their mid-80s. And so there isn't going to probably be time at the 75th anniversary of the year they were interned to do something like this. And there are a number of people that we've found who are alive and would like to take advantage of this that were, ordered to leave their universities. There was one fellow from OSU who was on the Rose Bowl football team, but he could not travel outside of 50 miles of Corvallis under the rules in effect at that time. This was prior to him being interned. And so he left. There's a woman featured on the front page of the Oregonian who she left the University of Oregon by executive order and was never able to return. So I think it's a special opportunity to do something and sort of honor the commitment to education these students were engaged in while they're still alive in those cases. And those are sort of the two unique features of the bill that really haven't been addressed by our country or our state, recently or ever in some cases in terms of the ability for a surviving family member to receive a benefit when normally that wasn't the case under the apology program by the federal government.
Thank you, Representative Clem. I realize I had not had my administrator introduce the bill or describe the bill.
We know what it's about.
But we know what it's about now. So a couple sessions back, I passed a bill that allowed World War I and World War II veterans who did not get their degree to obtain their degree. And then the next session, we came back and did the Vietnam veterans. And I think we're covering about everybody now. But it's sad that I had not thought about the internees, because it just wasn't in my consciousness at the moment, and I'm really glad that you did that. Ms. Suzuki, can I hear from you? I think the committee would like to hear a little bit about your father.
Sure. Hello, my name is Carol Suzuki, and I'm the immediate past chair of the Oregon Commission on Asian Affairs, and I'm obviously here in favor of House Bill 2823, and my father and my grandparents and my aunt and uncle, I mean, they were all interned first at the what was the Portland Assembly Center, which was at that time known as the Pacific International Livestock and Exposition Center, and is now known as the Portland Expo Center. And basically my family lived in Parkdale in the Hood River Valley. They were already at that time orchardists and unable to own land. I believe it was somehow leased under my father's name because he was an American citizen and born here. And, you know, after Pearl Harbor, I think there was a lot of... everyone was scared. I don't think they really knew what was going to happen to them, but they had already been victims of racism and discrimination. And then finally, they, under Executive Order 9066, knew that they had a very short time to pack up all of their belongings and settle with everything they had. And if you can imagine owning a farm, having animals, and just really not knowing how you're going to liquidate all of your assets, literally, because you really didn't know when you would be able to return. So my dad never really spoke a great deal about what happened, just other than just to refer to that period as when I was in camp. And my father at the time was just 19 years old. And so he wasn't in the university and certainly wouldn't have been affected by this bill, but it makes me wonder, you know, if he hadn't been interned, would he have gone to college? It's possible. But when your entire family, you know, your life is turned upside down and your primary breadwinner is locked up, and then he, in essence, because they first focused on the Issei, and at that time the first generation men who they interned first, so they were oftentimes separated from their families, it left like the eldest son, which is what my dad was, you know, kind of in charge for a little bit. And it just put a lot of, I just know that it turned my family's life upside down, certainly. And you know, I just feel that this bill helps to, in some small degree, right a past wrong.
I think, too, they had to sell their assets for pennies on the dollar because people knew that they had to do that.
And exactly.
So they just took advantage of it. How long was your family in term?
About 4 years.
Oh,
my dad, because he was an able young man, was actually able to, after a couple years, once they had been moved to Minidoka, Idaho, into an internment camp there, get out and work on some sugar beet farms, basically, and then also did some work on the railroad. But obviously they couldn't be anywhere near the West Coast, and so they found what they could further inside basically. So in Idaho.
But your family made it back to
the orchards that had made their home. It's kind of a nice story in that there was some family friends that told them, we'll watch everything for you. And so we're one of the few that actually had something to return to.
Thanks for sharing your story.
No, thank you.
Ms. Kotek, you're here. Representative Kotek.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Walker, members of the committee. For the record, Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44. And I don't have much to add other than I hope after me we can have my legislative assistant, Joel Fisher, speak briefly because he can tell you about the genesis of the bill. He worked really hard to bring this to fruition, so I hope we'll have a few minutes for him. And the connection for me is that the start of the internment process is in my district. Portland Expo Center is where more than 3,600 individuals started off before they were moved to other places. So I feel personally that there's that connection that, this is a very simple bill and hopes to correct some wrongs. And as you've heard from Carol, this has interrupted people's lives. And I hope some families will take advantage of it and really appreciate you hearing the bill today. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions, committee? Okay, Joel, we've actually heard from Representative Klim, so can you just be brief, because we have another representative who needs to get on the floor as well.
Chair Walker, members of the committee, my name is Joel Fisher. I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2823. I'm also a constituent of House District 44 and legislative assistant to Tina Kotek. This bill essentially started a year ago when, as a student at Oregon State University, I struck up a relationship with a friend named Andy Kuna and a class called Ethics of Diversity. And one of the things that Andy and I often talked about were the internment camps during World War II and their impact on Japanese Americans and all of America today. Andy suggested that OSU should grant honorary degrees to Japanese Americans who were attending OSU and did not finish that degree because they were sent to the internment camps. And I encouraged Andy to take his idea to the student government, Associated Students of Oregon State University. Andy signed up for internship class there, spent 9 weeks working on the issue, learned a lot about direct action organizing, but ultimately his idea didn't come to fruition, was not able to successfully beat out competing interests, catching the administration's attention. But Andy's passion for social justice has always stuck with me, along with the quotes that we talked about in the class from Eugene Debs, which says, "The social justice worth fighting for is the one you lose and lose and lose and lose before you win." When I came here to work for Representative Kotek, I suggested Andy's idea to Tina Kotek, and the result is the bill that I'm here testifying in support of today. Unfortunately, Andy is not able to be here to testify today, but just want to state for the record that House Bill 2823 is before us today because of Andy Kuna's amazing ability to address social injustice in creative ways.
Cool. Thank you. Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Fisher. I appreciate it. Always nice when our legislative assistants take an active role. Mine have done a great job, and I know others on this committee have had really active legislative assistants, and we appreciate it. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2823A and accept a motion after I open a work session.
That would be better. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2823A engrossed to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2823A engrossed to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
As Ms. Suzuki was speaking, it recalled a memory when I was ranching in Wheeler County, and some of the kindness she spoke of, it couldn't fully replace everything, but there were a number of ranchers in Wheeler County that when the order came down, some of the, quote, potential internees got lost on the way to Tule Lake with all their livestock, and these ranchers ended up housing some of the individuals and their livestock, and so there was some trying to make things as right as possible. They lost all their lands in the John Day Valley, and so it was certainly not a good situation. But anyway, I just very much thank you and Brian and Tina and everyone for bringing this bill forward. I think this is just incredibly appropriate and very long overdue. So thank you so very much.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Gravel, would you take the roll, please?
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Senator Morris?
Aye.
Senator
Westman?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Cruz? Aye.
Chair Walker? Aye. House Bill 2823A will go to the floor of the Senate. And who would like to take this one on and do justice to it?
I'll do it.
Senator Metzger, thank you. I think you do a fine job. Thank you. I appreciate coming today. All right, we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2066A. Close the work session first. Boy, I'm just not with it, am I? Usually I'm just like that. Yeah, you got my back. That's great. All right, so first of all, we're going to hear about this as Representative Richardson comes forward.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2066A consolidates the sister state committees into one sister state committee, provides for the consolidated committee membership to plan and coordinate committee duties for sister states other than the Fujian province. It removes the requirement for the committee to visit sister states biennially, provides for the Fujian sister state committee membership activities, and requires the Fujian sister state committee to visit the Fujian province biennially.
Okay. Good morning.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Representative Dennis Richardson from District 4, which is Southern Oregon between Medford and Grants Pass. And I appreciate the opportunity to come and speak in behalf of House Bill 2066A, which is a bill that was presented by Representative John Lim. Basically, we have a number of sister state relationships, Oregon and other locations. There's four in place presently. One is with China, it's Fujian, also with Taiwan, Japan, and Korea. Plus, the Legislative Assembly also has sister relationships with Honduras and the Parliament of the German state of Lower Saxony. And then basically what these relationships are is it is an agreement, accords that are signed saying that we would like to have more than just a passing relationship with these other locations. In the last 4 years, I've had the opportunity to go to China on different occasions representing Oregon in our sister state relationship with the province of Fujian. And what we found is that other nations take these relationships very seriously, and there are opportunities when they come to visit us, and we are not in a position to respond in the same way. When we go to other locations, we are treated with special protocol and with opportunities to meet with their leaders, and there's diplomatic procedures that are followed. In last session, I was called and said, well, there's this group from Japan that are here from Japan's Congress, and they're down in the rotunda, and the speaker's busy and not able to see them. Can you see to it? And so I went down, and they'd come all this way, and we were on their agenda to be visited. And so we ended up grabbing a room downstairs that was set up like a classroom, emptying it out, setting up with tables, putting tablecloths on there, having a protocol with chairs on where you sit in a certain way. And then we invited them in. And I was in the hallways grabbing freshman legislators that didn't have anything to do at that point and said, come, you're now part of a greeting party. And we set everybody down, and I grabbed gifts from the gift store, because it's protocol that you offer gifts, and just as a nice way of showing honor to people that visit you from in these official capacities. Well, we don't have the opportunity to do that normally. I mean, it's kind of hard to do that in such an ad hoc way, and so Representative Lim can speak more on how this would help to have Oregon be able to give a proper appearance to those groups that visit us. The one thing I would like to mention is that Fujian has a special kind of relationship in that China takes very seriously what is happening with the United States, and many of the people over there don't really know any more about the various states in the United States than we know about provinces in China. And so when we go over there and we're from the state of Oregon, it's a big deal because we represent the United States. And the relationships that we have with them are very serious in that we organized a committee for Fujian, and we sent letters with nice steel stamps showing this, signed by the Senate President and the Speaker of the House last session, and they invited them to come on a special diplomatic trip to Fujian province. And so it was decided that rather than make Fujian part of this bill, which is going to have a committee to represent sister states, that one had better be kept separate because we don't want to lose face with the Chinese having already established this committee for them.
I see. Okay. Great. Representative Lim.
Well, thank you very much for having hearing and possibly work session on House Bill 2066A. And for the record, my name is John Lim, State Representative from District 50, and I don't want to be redundant already what my good friend Representative Richardson already mentioned, but I just want to mention that the trade that comes from the courtesy and understanding the culture of the other countries. Sometimes we Americans and the superpower of the world, and we act our own way, but nowadays that's not the case. We need to understand the culture of the other country. In case if I want to give you one example, in American way, when we meet, maybe a couple drink, and we go to the business right away, and we can talk and laugh later on. In Asian way, we drink first and talk and lay our friendship together, and toward the end of it, we make a business deal. So that's the different kind of a culture. So what I'm saying, relationship and understanding the culture is very, very important in Asian country. Since I have the chance to speak to you, when the guest coming from the country, as you know, governance schedule very, very tight, especially as the time goes on. His or her demand as a governor so enormous, so simply cannot fulfill all the dignitaries and the peoples coming from state, out of country. So at this time, I just want to plug you in. We need a lieutenant governor.
I knew it coming.
I knew that.
I saw that one coming.
That was coming. I was writing a note to myself. That's why we need a lieutenant governor.
Currently, the beard is in the stock in the house, but we'll see what.
Representative Lim, I appreciate that you never waste a moment on advocating for your position.
Thank you very much. And already, we already have a four state or province has a we have a sister relationship and a two legislative relationship in Hungary and Germany, and then the China only one has a the committee. But I thought this is the good way to consolidate. If we have to committee, each sister state is going to be at. Divided the sister states. So with this House Bill 2066, we are consolidating all the sister state committees into one, which will be more the better to organize. At the same time, China is a freestanding one of the superpower in the world. So we made amendment make sure the China is a separate within this sister state committee. So relationship is very important, and with this the sister state relationship, which will continue to be more in the future, we will have more sisters around the world, and I think that will bring more jobs. But I just want to mention, we should not talk about just jobs and money bringing more the trade. That's one part. But to me, and laying the relationship, the understanding each other, understanding the culture, sometimes far more important just simply of the material issues such as money and trade. With that, and I wish you have that the work session on 2066A and pass it. That will make our state in the worldwide, make our state known throughout the world. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee.
Thank you, Representative Lim. I'm trying to not be sexist up here, and I call people on things like that. And I just have to ask you this question. We talk about sister states. How come we don't have brother states?
I think that as a lady, you have a right question to ask. As a matter of fact, I asked sometimes the question why we a sister state. I think it's a way of discriminating men and more the importance of a lady in our country.
Uh-huh.
And then in America, always the lady first. That's what I learned. And then to the husband and wife, they were not very happy. Business bankrupted. So they went to the Columbia River on the bridge. And they were going to jump down. And the husband said, lady first.
Oh!
So in America, it seems to me, what happened?
Well, that was a very sad story.
Yeah.
Do you have something there for your not-so-weekly Democrat?
Well, I just had a comment, Madam Chair. I noticed that this was a unanimous vote in the House, except that Representative Lim did not vote on this bill. Now, I don't know why, but it says he was excused, and so didn't have an opportunity to vote on the bill.
Exactly.
So what we could do, we could amend this bill so that it could go back for a concurrence, so he could have a chance to actually cast a vote. We could say something like this committee, should a lieutenant governor ever come to the state of Oregon, they would be joined on this committee, and then we could send it back for a concurrence vote for Representative Lim.
So move, Madam Chair.
Here you go.
Oh, boy. We needed a little bit of humor today, I have to tell you. We're all getting kind of down in the dumps with all this stuff at the last minute. But, you know, in all seriousness, this is a very serious bill. We appreciate it. And we're always about government streamlining here.
Thank you very much.
But we have enjoyed having the humor this morning as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
All right. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2066A and open a work session. Did you want to make that motion, Senator Master?
Oh, well, I think we'll let Senator
Cruz make the normal motion.
Yes, I think, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2066A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation with no additional mischief.
All right. Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2066A to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any further comments?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'd like to, and I want to, I appreciate Representative Lim bringing this forward. I had the good fortune of attending with him a trip to Taiwan last year, and we were not as prepared as we should have been. I mean, it was kind of a hodgepodge. I had brought some gifts from my farm, and Representative Lim had brought some gifts. But the gifting is incredibly important, and I was somewhat embarrassed that we weren't as coordinated in what we were doing as we should have been when we went over there. And additionally, when those delegations come here, we don't give them the same amount of respect they give us. So my hope is that with this, we will be more prepared when we go visit our friends in other countries, and from the in the Asian culture, this is incredibly important, and we need to represent well. So I'm hoping this will give us the ability to have a more coordinated effort when we make these visits.
I hope we don't have to limit these gifts to $10.
Yeah, $9.99.
I mean, you talk about gifts. People don't realize how broadly that impacts us in many
but,
ways.
Yeah, but it, and it's not from their perspective. It's not necessarily the value. It's who it's from and how it's presented. And we had some good fortune when we were meeting with the head of their legislative body, because I had jam and stuff like that, and he was a farmer, so we had a nice conversation. But you know, we didn't have as much of the official Oregon sort of things as we should have had, and it's just our ability to be prepared and to have an entity that can coordinate those sort of activities, I think is very important.
I think so, and I think that might be why you're going to be carrying this bill. Okay. Any other comments? Okay, Ms. Gravel, hit it.
Aye. Aye.
Senator Aye.
Senator
Aye.
Vice Chair Hughes?
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2066A is approved on its way to the Senate. And Senator Cruz, I'll have you carry that so you can tell the whole Senate your story, because I think it's important. We'll close the work session on 2066A. We are going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2675. Ms. Richardson, what's that about? And I think, Mr. Green, you're in a hurry, so come on up.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2675 changes the date by which school districts must give notice of a contract renewal to a probationary teacher. It applies to contracts renewed on or after the effective date of the act.
Thank you. Mr. Green.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jim Green with the Oregon School Boards Association. House Bill 2675 corrects a problem that was found in the statutes when we made changes to Oregon's collective bargaining law back in 1995. Probationary teachers, for those of you that don't know, we have two types of teachers in our school, probationary teachers and contract teachers. Probationary teachers serve a three-year probationary period. Each year they must be notified of whether their contract will be renewed or not. We had two conflicting dates in the statute. We had April 1st and March 15th. In practice, every school district in the state has been using March 15th in an agreement with the Oregon Education Association. The Oregon Education Association testified on the House side on this bill that they were fine with it. There's no amendments. All it does is make March 15th that date in statute so that school districts have to tell those probationary teachers, generally our newer teachers, whether they're going to be hired again for the following year.
Well, that's pretty simple.
Sounds reasonable.
Okay. Thank you. No other questions, no other witnesses. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2675. Senator Cruz.
You want to open the work session?
I do. I will open that work session.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2675 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2675 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Okay. Ms. Gravel, will you call the roll?
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Senator
Warren? Aye.
Senator Wesley?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2675 is approved. It's on the way to the floor. And Senator Wesley, you can carry that one.
I would be pleased, Madam Chair.
Okay, great. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2675, open a public hearing on HCR 9. And thank you, Mr. Green.
Madam Chair, there may not be anyone signed up on this. I noticed that Senator Wesley is a co-sponsor. I don't know if he's comfortable speaking to it or if it's something that we might just want to tackle ourselves.
Have you ever known a time when Senator Wesley was not comfortable?
That's right. And did he come?
Is he here? Okay, well, you know what? Let's figure out what we're going to do here. Let's hold off on that one. And when we go and get Representative Riley, we'll get Representative Wisman at the same time. So we'll back out of this. I'll close the public hearing on HCR 9. We'll reopen it in a minute. We'll go to House Bill 2579.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2579 expands the State Board of Higher Education by the addition of one faculty position. It specifies board membership.
Okay. Who's here on that one?
Presumably that Lisa. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Ms. Ball, are you here on this one?
Signed up.
Okay. You're signed up. I don't have the sign-up sheet yet. Come on. Somebody jump up. I don't care. This is a free-for-all this morning. Oh, that's okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, it was liable to protocol. I didn't bring any gifts or any jam.
Oh, okay. And Brett Rolette's here, too. Brett, come on up. And then, Lisa, you can just have the table all by yourself when they're done. Okay, great. Name, rank,
yep,
serial number.
Hi, for the record, my name is Rob Wagner. I'm the political director for the American Federation of Teachers here in Oregon. And House Bill 2579 has been heard by a couple members of this committee when there was a long and winding trip down to Ashland in the snow.
That's right.
And we sat through 4.5 hours of hearing, and Mark Perlman, who's to my right, professor from Western Oregon University, we traveled down and were able to testify on the bill. The reason for the bill right now on the State Board of Higher Education, there are 2 student positions and 1 faculty position. And the faculty position has never come from any of our regional campuses, which is Southern, Western, Eastern, or OIT. This bill would add a 2nd faculty position to the State Board. And in terms of testimony, the Chancellor testified on the House side, but it wasn't direct opposition from anyone. It passed with overwhelming bipartisan support out of the House a couple weeks ago. And with that, unless people want to hear from me, I'll turn it over to Mark to talk a little bit about the bill and to Brett.
Yeah, I do see my notes here from our Ashland trip from February 23rd. Mr. Perlman, you were there too.
Yes, I was.
What a nice long trip that was.
In the snow. Well, good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Mark Perlman. I'm a philosophy professor at Western Oregon University, and I'm also the president of the Western Oregon University Federation of Teachers, and we're in favor of House Bill 2579. I guess I won't reiterate everything Rob said. Mainly, the question is why faculty on the Board of Higher Ed, which might seem like a silly question. I mean, they are experts in higher ed. I was surprised to learn that for a good long time there were no faculty members on the Board of Higher Ed, and it's only been about a decade since there were any. And as Rob said, since there has been a faculty member on the board, it's always been from one of Oregon's large research institutions, and never from one of the regionals. And we're not complaining about U of O and OSU having a faculty member on the board. We think that they ought to. It's just that we think that the regionals are sort of left out of that picture, and so that's why instead of fighting over one seat, we thought to have 2 seats, one that would be from one of the large regional campuses, one of the large research campuses, and another seat that was from one of the regionals would make more sense, so then we don't have to bicker over who gets the one faculty seat. And what's interesting is right now, there are, as Rob said, there are 2 student seats on the board. One of those students is from Western Oregon University. So we do have a student, and we've never had a faculty board position from WOU or any of the other regional schools. So in this sense, we would just get parity with the larger research institutions. And one of the reasons we think that's important is that the regional campuses have special situations, somewhat different kind of student. They have special needs and special funding issues. And we think it's important to have a faculty member from one of those campuses on the board to speak to those. And just as an example for something that they might have input on is that the current funding model in higher ed is basically puts regional campuses at a disadvantage as far as getting the state money for students. And I think a faculty member on the board from a regional school would have important input on issues like that. And so that's why we're in favor of this. So I'll leave it with that. If anybody has questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Perlman. Let's hear from Mr. Roulette, and then we'll ask some questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brett Roulette, Legislative Director with the Oregon Student Association. And basically, I am here this morning to add my support behind this bill. As you're aware, there are currently 2 student positions on the board. Those have rotated. Currently, the positions are held by a student at Western Oregon University and Eastern Oregon University. So it allows the opportunity for the regional institutions to be represented. And the governor has done a great job, and previous governors have done a good job in making sure that the student positions do rotate between some of the regional institutions and the larger institutions in our state. And that's allowed when you have the 2 positions. So with that, I think to save some time for you all, I would just say that students support this and ask that you support the bill. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the committee? I was, excuse me, reviewing the written testimony that we were provided back in February from both of you, and you indicated that there might have been some concern about moving the board to 12 seats, Mr. Wagner, but there are scores of state boards and commissions with oversight of state agencies which have even numbers of board members, and also you found that there has never been a board vote decided by one vote.
In my research, yes.
And you also indicated that in the Oregon legislature, those are even numbers, and we all know the value of 31 and 16. So I just wanted to get that on the record if none of you have your written testimony previously. Okay, great. No questions, so thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hear from Ms. Zavala and what the university system thinks about this.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning. Ms. Zavala, for the record. Since the hearing in February and since the hearing in the House, we have had a conversation with both the president and the vice president of the board, and they are not inclined to be very favorable of the bill. During the House hearing, the chancellor did testify, and he brought up a couple of concerns, actually about four concerns that we have identified, and I'd just like to put those on the record. We follow most of the recommendations. I shouldn't say most, but we follow recommendations of the Association of Governing Boards. And historically, the AGB has consistently recommended a statewide viewpoint and counsels against representation on any governing board from specified interest groups, if you will. House Bill 2579 also disaggregates the board into groups representing special interests. We have, as the record shows, we have two students on the board, and those are statutorily defined, and they are to rotate among campuses. The faculty member, actually, I recall this very well. This was my first session representing the system in 1999 when the faculty member was added to the board. At that time, the intent behind the legislation was that the governor would make that appointment as well, and that that would rotate among the institutions. We have now our second faculty member serving since 1999, and that is a faculty member from Portland State University. The faculty member position was filled by Dr. Jerry Richmond from the University of Oregon. So the rotation hasn't had an ample opportunity to really happen. So I just want to make sure that we had that on the record as well. We believe that the state board has been served very well, as has served the state very well, by having a statewide viewpoint and not being bound to loyalties to groups. We're concerned that this may become a trend and may make it difficult for the board to maintain that statewide public interest and make that paramount if we go in the direction of specific recommendations and specific representation. I will just close by saying that the chancellor, in his testimony in the House, did give an example of where it does work. You've given a few of other examples, but his example was of a man named Noah who was asked to gather 40 two species, two of each from each species, and that's worked out very well. But as the chancellor pointed out, he was only required to keep them together for 40 days and 40 nights. So we were just very much concerned that this is a trend, and we are concerned about the even-numbered board members. Those concerns those are policy decisions that this body will make. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Hall. Any questions? Okay, we're closing the public hearing on House Bill 2579. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2579.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2579 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2579 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any questions, discussion? Senator Morse, your brow was furrowed, so I'm going to go to you first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I had wondered why there were negative votes in the House. I guess I understand now why, although I believe there is a place for the regionals in this discussion. They are a vital part of our educational, higher education system, and quite often seem to be less heard in some ways, as in fact is reflected in some of the budget discussions we're talking about. So I would be supportive of this bill.
Good. Senator Cruz.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I understand what's being attempted here, but personally I think we need to be looking at governance of education in a more global manner, and it clearly will be a discussion I hope to engage in during the interim. I think if we're going to have a true K-16, K-20 system, we need to look in a more global manner. And for that reason, I am not going to support the bill, simply because I would prefer a different structure altogether.
Okay. Senator Metzger?
No comment.
No comment? Senator Russell? Okay, well, I'm inclined to support this bill. I appreciate that one of the regional university professors drove all the way down to Ashland to express his viewpoint. And I think the case has been made clear, and Noah's Ark notwithstanding, the state board can use the representation from around the state, and hopefully we will be tackling these resource fees. Okay, no further discussion. Ms. Gravel, would you take the roll, please?
Aye.
Senator Moore?
Aye.
Senator Leifert?
Aye.
No.
Chair Walker? Aye. Senate Bill House Bill 2579 will go to the floor, and you know what? I'm going to carry that one. Thank you, everyone, for your testimony. Okay, I'll close the work session on House Bill 2579, and where are we at now? We're with the...
The last two
are all involving House members. They were under a call, but are they still under the call?
Madam Chair.
Okay, I got your notes.
Okay.
Senator Wesson, Representative Wisnant's staff is here, so we'll go ahead and reopen the hearing on HCR 9. And Ms. Gravel, if you could, while we're waiting, try to get Representative Riley at least. Tell him to scoot over here as quickly as he can. So we are in public hearing on HCR 9, and Representative Wisnant's staff is here. I'm sorry, I don't know your name, but we'll know that soon enough. And let me see, I think B.J. Westland, I think I'd like to hear from you as well. Come on up, would you please, sir? I need some representation on this bill.
I will quickly mention the HCR 9 commends the city of Lapine for becoming Oregon's newest city.
Okay. Great.
Madam Chair, I would be happy to go to the witness stand and testify if that would...
I think it might make your son a little more comfortable, so why don't you do that? He's sitting there wondering, why am I sitting here? What has my father done to me now?
Having his dad next to him might actually make him uncomfortable.
All right. So who wants to start off this grand introduction?
Okay. Chair Walker, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Layla Estes, and I'm the legislative assistant to State Representative Jean Wisnant.
And Layla, how do you spell your last name?
It's Layla, L-E-Y-L-A, and the last name is E-S-T-E-S.
Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm. I think the House is still under call, so Rep. Wisnant handed me the folder as he was running back onto the floor. He did ask me to apologize to the committee and to the citizens of Lapine for not being able to be here. On November 7, 2006, Lapine, a rural county in South Deschutes County, became Oregon's newest city. After trying and failing to incorporate three times during the last 20 years, a slim margin of citizens voted to become a city. New cities are a rare occurrence in Oregon, as you know. In the last 30 years, only three cities have incorporated. Lapine City Councilors are working hard to address the issues of their citizens. This resolution recognizes the hard work and commitment of the founders of this beautiful area and gives proper credit to those who worked for incorporation and developed the community over the past century. Passing this resolution honors the history and the future of Oregon's newest city, and on behalf of Representative Wisnett and the 1,500 citizens of Lapine, I ask your aye vote.
Great. Thank you. So, do they have a mayor yet?
They do have a mayor.
And they're working on getting their city council?
Their city council was all elected the same election when they voted to incorporate. So they've got a functioning city council down there.
Well, what would have happened if they'd elected the city council but not passed the bill to become a city?
I don't know.
City councilors without a city. That would have been quite funny. All right. Well, thank you, Ms. Estes. Senator Westland?
Madam Chair, for the record, Ben Westland, District 27. And first of all, I'd like to thank Representative Wisnett for his hard work on this bill. The it's really quite important to our area. And as Layla has indicated, it's really an interesting story in terms of the history of Lapine trying to incorporate. They're one of the fastest growing regions in the fastest growing region in the state. Tried to incorporate three times in last November when they incorporated. They did elect the city council. They did elect the mayor, you know, a great individual, Stu Martinez. And so they're just all filled and flush with victory on election night eve. And the next morning they wake up and it's kind of a little bit like, oh, we need revenue to run this city. And they have none, zero, nada, zip. I mean, the next day the county informed them that they were cutting off their many of their county funds. And so through the efforts of a great many people and certainly including the governor, we've made all these stopgap measures to get them up and running. So, anyway, it's a wonderful story. They're hard, dedicated citizens. And this recognition, I think, is very appropriate given the history, their efforts, and the vital need that a city of Lapine will provide to the citizens, not only of Deschutes County, but of the entire state. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Do you know where Lapine is?
Yes, I do, ma'am.
Let's state your name for the record, please.
My name is PJ Westland. I'm from Bend, Oregon, and this is a good bill.
Should pass.
Should pass.
Was Lapine the hot spot to go to from Tumalo?
No.
Could you put a little more emotion?
I'm sure. I think BJ's testimony is far superior to his father.
Oh, there you go. There you go. You know, there is a, let me ask if you knew where, if you know, BJ, where the name Lapine comes from.
I do not.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give you a little history lesson just because Ms. Richardson did that for us, which I actually appreciate. Lapine was named by Alfred Aya, who, with James Gleason and W.R. Riley, acquired exclusive township rights from the Deschutes Land Company in 1910. The community's name was suggested by the abundance of
pine trees.
Yes, in the neighborhood. When the post office was established, the postal authorities consolidated the two parts of the name into Lapine, making it official in 1951. So there you go. See, even while you're not in school, you get a history lesson.
Madam Chair, I appreciate you putting that on the record. However, and that does seem like a common sense way to name the town, but that's not why it was named.
Oh. Controversy.
From the house staff, my bad.
She got it from the house staff. So I would love to hear the true version, Ms.
They don't
Estes.
Know what the true version is, but they say that it was not because of the trees. Apparently there was somebody down there who he had come from a town or something in some other country, and that's what he wanted. He wanted to name, it was something in his history that he wanted to name his new town Lapine. It had nothing to do with the trees.
Well, we're going to have to turn to Oregon's Geographic Names Book by Lewis MacArthur and get the real story, because I trust that man.
Well, Madam Chair,
then we can opine.
Yeah. And then we can opine.
on Bluff Line.
Madam Chair, based on this controversy, I'm not sure I can support the bill.
I think we better clear this up before this bill moves forward.
I think we need an amendment.
I think so too, Senator Metzger. So I will make sure we get a copy of, I usually carry one in my car, a copy of the geographic names of Oregon, because whenever I travel around the state, I like to know about the history of the towns. But when I got a new car, I haven't yet transferred all over the stuff.
Madam Chair, would that be considered distracted driving if you're reading?
Well, I'm the passenger when my husband does the driving, and I get to passenger it, and I read to him as we travel along. And the children have always known that when we go on road trips with the family, they're going to learn something about every city.
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
If I may, I'd just like to point out that I think B.J. Westland's testimony as to the name probably reflects the most accurate understanding of the origin of the name. I don't know. Excellent testimony, Sen.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
As I pointed out, so.
Maybe committee staff can have that available for whoever carries this bill.
Yes.
Madam Chair.
Otherwise, they might get needled on the floor.
There you go. All right. We will close the public hearing on HCR 9. Thank you all for your very informative testimony. We appreciate
it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
We'll open a work session on HCR 9.
Madam Chair, I move HCR 9 to the Senate floor with a recommendation that it be adopted.
Senator Cruz moves HCR 9 to the floor of the Senate. I'm trying to do two things at once. With a recommendation that it be adopted. Any discussion?
Madam Chair, under the provision that Senator Westland carry the bill and fully explain name origin during his floor speech.
Madam Chair, if I may, in addition to Dana's very capable staffing, I'd like to have my son staff me on the floor for this bill. I may run into trouble on questioning, and I need to count on him as a resource.
All right. I think we can handle that. Any other comments? If not, Ms. Gravel, please take the roll.
Aye.
Just in time.
Aye.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Gosh, this is a tough one with the controversy and everything, but I will give a provisional aye. So.
All right. HCR 9 passes, moves to the floor of the Senate. Senator Westland, you will be carrying that.
Thank you.
Okay, well, great. Representative Riley has joined us just in time. We're going to open a hearing on House Bill 2702, one of my favorite bills.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2702A directs the governor to assign a state agency responsibility for developing a plan to ensure written documents produced by the executive department conform to plain language standards. It defines plain language standards. It directs the appointed agency to adopt the plan by November 1st, 2007, and to report to the Legislative Assembly by February 1st, 2008, and again by January 1st, 2009, declares an emergency and take effect upon passage.
Okay,
you
great.
You're mischief, aren't you?
He is. All right, Representative Riley, introduce yourself and give us the skinny.
Madam Speaker, members of the committee for the
Madam record. Speaker, wow.
Speaker, well, I'm sorry. That's I just came from the floor under call. Madam Chair and committee members, for the record, Representative Chuck Riley from District 29, Hillsborough, Cornelius, Forest Grove. This is a bill that we need in this state. We don't communicate very plainly with our constituents, our citizens, and we need to start doing that. Senator, Governor Gregoire in Washington State passed this as an executive order 2 years ago. It's been extremely effective there. There are many instances that show that this saves money. It increases the awareness of our citizens of what they need to do to communicate back with us and encourages them to do so. It's easy bill, very plain language bill. It's easy to understand, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Senator Cruz has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Riley. Did you consider at any point in time during the work on this bill in the House to also include the ORSs and the ORs?
Chair Walker, Senator Cruz, yes, actually, I did consider it. And I'd certainly, sometime in the future, like to consider it again. I think it's something that we could stand to do. I think it is way too ambitious for us to start in the beginning. I think we should start with the executive branch and those missives, to speak plainly, missives that we send out to our constituents and to the public.
And Representative Riley, in the hearing you had in the House, you had Dana Howard Botka from the state of Washington come down from the office of the governor, and she gave an example, and this is how they actually have saved money. With the Washington Department of Revenue, in 2003, the agency rewrote a one-page letter to all Washington businesses, which reminded them they were responsible for voluntarily paying the state's use tax, sales tax on goods they may have purchased out of state or over the internet, you know, like over in Oregon or something. The rewrite tripled the number of businesses paying the tax. With the old letter, 97% of the businesses never replied. With the new letter, 43% replied or paid. Finally, while they hope to draw in an additional $1.2 million in annual use tax with the letter, they actually ended up collecting $2 million.
That's correct, Senator Walker. And there are lots of examples of how this has helped. One form that was redesigned to have people register their livestock saw compliance rates jump from 40 to 95%. There are just hundreds of these examples in places where it's been used. The state of Florida, the governor there instituted it as an executive order. The county of Los Angeles is actually doing this now. The federal government has a couple of agencies that are doing it, and the results are phenomenal.
Madam Chair, when you bring up the federal agency aspect, you know, if the state has jurisdiction over federal programs and has to communicate, I'm assuming this doesn't prohibit them from, because the federal government is still going to be somewhat bureaucratic in the detail of what they want passed out. How does that work?
Well, obviously we can't override federal law.
Okay.
They've started themselves. The Navy has increased its compensation rates and took 23% less time to answer phone calls based on one change.
Well, Madam Chair, I applaud this and hope we can expand. I know, for example, at the federal level, the document about the regulation of the price of cabbage is somewhere in the neighborhood of 14,000 words, and that's on cabbage. So clearly we have a long way to go.
We do have a long way to go, and I believe this is a good start.
Yeah, Senator Westland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Riley, I very much applaud the spirit and intent of what you're trying to get at here. My question is during the House testimony, was there any consideration given to a potential fiscal impact on the state agencies, and how is that being dealt with?
Chair Walker, Senator Westland, there was. In fact, this bill has been amended to take care of some of those concerns. This bill started out as a direct requirement for the executive departments to start to implement this. But we've taken care of some of those, in fact, most of the fiscal constraints by the amendments that we put in making this. And in fact, Patrick Allen is in the audience. If you wanted to talk a question about how it's going to be implemented, he's here to help with that.
And, Senator, I would indicate that in the back of your materials is the fiscal for this, and it is determined to be indeterminate at this time. The Legislative Fiscal Office says they cannot determine with certainty the implementation impact on subject agencies beyond the 2007-09 biennium. It is relying on public statements of the executive branch that subject agencies will not be expected to comply with the measure's requirements if such compliance exceeds their budgeted capacity. So it's a little bit lame in that we're not making an overall directive. We're just sort of recommending, and if they have the ability to do it within their budget, they can. Is that,
Madam Chair,
sort of what we're saying, Representative Riley?
That's exactly right. And as I say, that's not how the bill started, but we wanted to get something through as opposed to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how we were able to do that.
I would also indicate, colleagues, that I testified on this bill in the House because I had direct experience with constituents. I see Ms. Buchanan's in the back of the room. I had a constituent who was just furious. They had agreed to enter into a payment plan with the Department of Revenue because they owed taxes. And the Department of Revenue sent out to them something called a distraint warrant and writ of execution, which, you know, if you don't work in the court system, that would scare the heebie-jeebies out of you. And so these people were really upset because it said that they would, you know, levy on their property, and it was a warrant and all of this. And they said, well, gee, we wanted to pay our taxes, and we thought we'd enter into an agreement. The Department of Revenue's response was, well, we need to let them know if they don't pay, we do have that right to collect. But we eventually agreed on some language that was a little more kinder and gentler and said the same thing, but was more plain with the intent that they wanted. So, you know, eventually we got there, but I think it's incumbent upon the agency heads of all these departments to get together with their staff and say, think about this in your everyday line of work. Just look at this, read it, ask your husband or your wife to read it. You know, do they understand it? If they don't, mm-hmm. then we've got a problem, and think of a better way to say what you're saying. And I think they can do that without budgeting a whole lot of money. They just start opening up the conversation.
And I believe that's right. And I believe that the governor's office has every intention of making that happen.
Okay, I do as well.
Let's do it.
Any further conversation, Senator Morris?
This is a good bill.
Yeah.
Could we amend it to include common sense as well?
That's beyond the ability of government, I
think. Okay.
To understand the word, the phrase. Yeah, I'm with you, please.
But we'll get there.
All right. Well, I think we're all on board. Thank you, Representative Riley, for trekking over here.
Thank you, Senator Walker. Thank you, Committee.
Okay. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2702A and open a work session.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2702A engrossed to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2702A engrossed the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any further comments or discussion? Okay, Ms. Gravel.
Aye.
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 Vice Chair,
please. Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2702A goes to the floor of the Senate. You know, I had forgotten I was a co-sponsor of that, and I wanted to carry it. But, Senator Morris, I want you to carry something. Would you be willing to carry the bill adding the extra person on the Board of Higher Ed?
Certainly.
Or the Board of Ed?
Certainly.
Yeah.
And I would like to make a comment once you go in out of this.
Okay, so I'm going to reassign you to do 2579 because you like that bill as well. But this 2702, I'm going to have a little fun with that one on the floor. So I'm going to carry that. We'll close the work session on 2702, and then we're just open for other business, and that would be Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to at least make a statement with respect to House Bill 2579, and I don't know that it's a conflict of interest, but it's a disclosure that...
Hang on. Let's reopen Do we need to reopen the public hearing or the work session?
Work session, probably.
Okay, let's reopen the work session on House Bill 2579.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Disclosure, my son is a professor at one of the regionals.
Oh, okay. And he could potentially be appointed to one of these positions.
Well, conceivably, but I just wanted to make that known. That,
I think that's sufficiently distant.
Okay, but you, abundance of caution.
All right. Well, I appreciate that you wanted to do that. We want to make sure we cover all of our bases here. And you are going to carry that bill, and you can make that statement on the record. What does he teach? What does your son teach?
Oh, excuse me. Computer science.
Oh.
Oh, a smart guy.
Yeah, one of the smart kids.
He's a physicist.
Oh, Lord. Jeez, he's really smart. Okay, well, we'll close the work session. All right, anything else for the good of the order? See, I got you out early today.
Yeah.
Thank you very
much.
Almost
just a vanilla day, and you gave us one.
I appreciate that. I did. All right, we'll close the committee. We're adjourned. Thank you.